Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, this is Yorma Kalkin from Jefferson Airplane and Hot Tuna, and you are listening to Rock and Roll Archaeology.
DIY and How Studios presents Deeper Digs in Rock, part of the Rock and Roll Archaeology Project. Music, culture, technology, and rock and roll. Now, on with the show.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Deeper Digs in Rock, a production of Rock and Roll Archaeology. Christian Swain here behind the mic in San Francisco. Hey, thanks once again for joining us. In Deeper Digs, we go a little further, dig a little deeper into specific topics that tie in with rock and roll history, the music, the culture, and the technology. It's the companion show to our episodic overview of rock history, the Rock and Roll Archaeology Podcast. I read the news today, oh boy. Rock and Roll Archaeology can now be found on Spotify. Maybe you are listening to us right here and right now on the service. If so, you may be a new listener. Welcome. And if you've just switched over, well, then good for you. Okay, check out the website if you get a chance. And if you are feeling groovy, click the Support the Shows tab. Do what you think to do from there. Okay, thank you. What a treat for everyone. Undeniable legend with us today. From one of the first bands in the British invasion to set foot on American shores in the mid-1960s, a man some credit by way of being handy with a razor blade on an old speaker cone, of creating fuzz, making distortion as art form. Yes, I am talking with Mr. Dave Davies today. The Kinks are one of our favorites. Just go listen to episode 11 of our main series to hear the whole story. Here are the cliff notes. You Really Got Me and a string of hits sets the UK on fire. They come to America as conquering heroes in the wake of the Beatles and had the pop rock chops to make it big here. And boy, did they ever, briefly. There were problems. Bad management, bad blood, bad antics on the road, which actually led to the Kinks being banned from performing in the States for 4 long years. When their compatriots The Who and The Stones are laying the groundwork for superstardom. Well, now, what can a poor boy do? Internalize and make the best of it. Go with what you got. Keep a stiff upper lip. And that's what they did. Brother Ray began writing very English songs about very English things. Sure, it didn't cross over to America so much at the time, but it made them hugely influential at home. 90s Britpop, anybody? In the 1970s, they make a big comeback stateside, continue to write great songs, get the big contract from Clive Davis, and the life they thought was lost in the 1960s was now arena-filled parties for all involved. Today, they have assumed their rightful place in the pantheon of rock gods, along with the other original Brits that rocked our world. Dave, Brother Ray, Mick Avery, and the late Peter Quaife are part of rock and roll canon. As you will hear in this interview, there may be life left in the old Muswell Hillbillies. October 2018 is a special one for Dave, a real family affair. On the 12th, he has a new album just out of material originally recorded in the 1970s called Decade. actually helped along by sons Martin and Simon looking in all the nooks and crannies of the Davies house. Another son, Daniel Davies, comes out with his album Events Score. And the 50th anniversary of the Kinks' seminal album, The Kinks Are the Village Green Preservation Society, is out as well. Father Christmas has come early for the Davies clan. Okay, let's have a spot of tea with Dave Davies. Welcome to Deeper Digs in Rock, Dave Davies. How are you today?
I am fine, Christian. Nice to speak to you.
Yeah. This is fantastic. I mean, you are a real legend, one of the original British invasion guys. But before we get to that, tell me about the new album, Decade. I think it's a bit of a family affair, right?
Well, yeah. It's Decade will be out at the beginning of October. Mm-hmm. And it is a project that I put together with the help of my sons, Martin Davies and Simon Davies, who was the producer. I think he's done a great job on it. And it's an album of unreleased recordings that I made in the 70s, hence the word decade of the 70s, yeah. So it's wonderful after all this time to finally get these songs together and produce and so they can see the light of day. So I'm very excited about the prospects of Decade coming out.
And literally the light of day. I believe some of these tracks were like hidden like under your bed and in closets and things like that.
Yeah, they were in attics and literally under beds, and then the guys, Martin and Simon, pulled this stuff together and we listened to it, and Simon produced it and made it as good as he could, and we're very, very pleased with it.
Yeah, so and this is kind of a companion to 2011's Hidden Treasures, an album of songs you first recorded in the 1960s, right?
Well, yeah, you could say that in a way, but I know these recordings on Decade, I didn't actually know what to do with the recordings or even if I would finish them all.
So you were just kind of spending time in Conk Studios at the time?
Yeah, I mean, the earliest recording of a Decade was actually recorded at where was that? A studio called Morgan Studios in North London, and where we recorded albums like Lowly versus Barrel Man. We did those sort of recordings. So, but most of them were actually recorded at Conk. Some recordings were made at the old Apple Studios.
Not Abbey Road, but the Beatles Apple building.
Yeah, they go back that far. So But it was really enjoyable. It was emotional.
Oh, to go back and revisit all this.
Yeah,
I can imagine. Finding them to begin with. I mean, what a treasure hunt. And then putting the tapes on, of which I know there's a process that you have to do with old tapes. You have to warm them up. And then I think you very quickly transpose them to digital, right?
Yeah, you bake them. It's a procedure. And then transfer it to digital format. And so we're lucky we had that expertise, and Simon mixed them, and and added some extra things to it sonically to make it enhance it.
Yeah,
that's
so,
it took about three years.
Oh, really? 3 years, huh? Wow.
Probably from, like, start to finish. Mm-hmm. And it was literally a labor of love, although some of it was a bit painful emotionally.
Really? Was there one in particular that just really floored you and you had a hard time even listening to?
Well, I think a few songs were like that. You know, when you sit down and revisit all these emotions and feelings that you went through at the time, and you think, you know, but sometimes it's good to confront your inner feelings and get this stuff out. And I'm really pleased I finally managed to get it out so everybody can listen to it.
Yeah, so 13 tracks, and Cradle to Grave is released already as a preview of the album, and people can find it streaming or to buy. And it's a lushly produced track that certainly evokes like early 70s British glam is kind of what I heard, which predominated the London scene at the time. I believe the initial recording was in 1973 for that song, right?
Yeah, I kept coming back to it in 73, but it was a song that I wrote really about my own life and my reflections on how I saw life at that point in time. But
running from cradle to grave.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and all the problems and all the things that happened to you. So it's quite a whole album's quite a sort of an inner journey, really. It was, you know, I'm really pleased we finally got the project out and finished.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the rest of the album, the other 12 songs. So, is Cradle to Grave kind of a good preview of the album? The other songs kind of fit along with that.
Yeah, I think surprisingly enough, although the songs were recorded over 10 years or within. They're not sequential, like linear thing. Mm-hmm. They're just Simon decided we put the songs together to see if they fit musically and sonically,
right,
rather than, you know, from A to Z sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it works. I think they're very complementary. The running order is quite complementary, although obviously that it recorded over a few years. They have a sonic theme or a tone or flavor to them, so I'm
so
quite
maybe,
happy.
Maybe like
that
the early
work.
70s stuff sounds a certain way, and the later 70s stuff, we might be able to pick out like the time frames of each of the original tracks.
I think so, but at the same time, they have a sonic thread, produced, and so it's interesting from that point of view that the songs do complement each other. So it should be an interesting journey for the listeners.
So you took these songs that were originally recorded in the 1970s, and now Simon has kind of updated them for the ears of the 21st century listener.
Well, in a way, they obviously have got the feel and the sentiments of at that time.
Yeah.
But I think we wanted to keep that fairly, you know, real. Mm-hmm. We wanted to keep recording sounding real so you could tell that where they were, you know, what time they were recorded.
Yeah.
But I think, obviously, Simon has kind of made a great job of weaving in, you know, modern technology and the original recordings and everything in between. So I think he's done a magnificent job.
Yeah,
and of course
it has a great balance between the two. I can hear that as with just the single "Cradle to Grave."
Yeah, and it's a reflective song. It's a philosophical song. It's about my journey and hopefully our journey as human beings. and there are all emotions that touch all of us. You know, the great thing about writing is that sometimes you think you're writing about your own feelings and your immediate environment, and then you listen to it more and you realize the kind of writing about all of us. We all go through these. That's the great thing about rock and roll. It's about emotions and
those universal feelings.
Yeah, I think so. And I like to think that most people can relate to these feelings. It's a blessing of rock and roll, I think.
So what's the next single going to be?
Well, I'm not absolutely sure yet. I think it might be Same Old Blues, a track from Decades. Uh-huh. But I think there's many tracks that could pop up and assert themselves, you know.
Yeah. And it's a different world in how these things are determined today than back when you guys first started, definitely. So
it's very different. It's almost like everybody has a different view, but everybody, it's like a committee in a way. And people,
as opposed to just Shel Talmy telling you what to do, right?
Oh, it's great working with Shel. I think in the early years, we really needed someone to help, to encourage.
Whip you boys into shape, huh?
Well, not really. Always worked as a team.
Yeah.
I think that's a great thing. If you can get on board everybody on board or on track with a similar plan, you can achieve a lot.
Yeah. So how many of these songs are you working into the live act?
Well, I've touched on a few ideas. Probably we might even use 3 or 4, but we'll change maybe the arrangements and maybe the keys of them, but I'll try and include a couple or three songs, different versions of songs, because the tone and the sound of the pieces are very different. It's a different era, but we can still, a song is a song is a song, so if we can interpret the song in slightly different ways for live venues.
Of course. And you kind of play around with the old classics as well keep them fresh and keep them fresh for the band, keep them fresh for the audience, right?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, but that's what I love about playing live is that even old songs, you can make them feel new. Like the audience, if the audience are any into it, everything takes on a new life. And I like to mix the new with the old and see how it flows. So I'm looking forward to playing some of these songs live and see how they integrate with the existing songs in the set. No, because I also do a couple of songs from my last album that I recorded with one of my other sons, Russell Davis.
Right.
An album called Open Road, which was out about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I flagged up the songs from that album. And that was a great joy to be involved in that project as well.
Oh, I bet. So, I bet. So your whole family's still very musical, huh?
Yeah, it's true. And my son I got a son called Daniel Dave, who's releasing an album in October as well.
Wow, it is a big Davis.
Going to be a big month.
Dave October. So Davis October. So
Dave Tober.
Dave Tober. We'll call it Dave Tober. All right. Do you still enjoy touring? Even fancy hotels and nice coaches, touring coaches, it's still a bit of a chore, but you still enjoy it, huh?
Yeah, it's always been, the traveling's always been the worst side of it, most exhausting.
Yeah.
But when you get up on stage,
those 2 hours or so, or just
that's where things come to life. Yeah. the great thing about live shows and
it's like
and
a touring. Drug. You know, it's once you get addicted, it's hard to give up.
Yeah, I know. But there are practical reasons also.
Well, especially now with the recording industry in the state that it is, the fact is most musicians are making their money on the touring side of things.
Yeah, I mean, live touring is really an important aspect of music nowadays.
Yeah.
But that's why I like mixing the old and new, so you can still play with new ideas and new arrangements, and you can, you know, have like all down of the, all of the night and old songs and mix it up.
I watched a few videos of you recently out playing, and you know, it still looks like a gas. The audience still looks like they're having a great time. You certainly look like you're having a great time, and so as long as you can keep it up, keep on doing it, right?
Yeah, it's something special about playing live, and especially now a decade coming out, and at last all those ideas that have been in the background and half-finished ideas and songs that nobody ever heard. I'm really looking forward to see what people think.
Definitely Hidden Treasures was well-received, so I can't imagine that a decade will be any less than that. So let me go back a little here. So in 2004, you suffered a stroke that paralyzed your right side. I think it took you almost 2 years to get back to performing again. And recovering from a stroke is not easy. I applaud you. I can't imagine the difficulty for a world-renowned guitar player. I guess one day at a time?
Yeah, you got it. You just got to keep plowing ahead, and you have to be really, really determined.
Yeah.
With exercise, because the muscles retain memory anyway. Mm-hmm. So all that memory is contained in muscles as well as the brain. So you have to keep going through this process of reminding yourself and your body and your brain. What the hell it's supposed to do.
You're telling it and it's just not quite getting it, even though you know it, and what you're saying is your fingers still remember it.
Yeah, and after a while it becomes like, you know, that old thing about, you know, it's like riding a bike.
Yeah.
You never really forget, but sometimes you're to remind yourself.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult, lengthy process, but, you know, it's, I think I learned a lot about myself and about human nature and people through having that debilitating illness.
Oh, I can't. It's got to be a life-changing event.
It is. It is, really. You don't know anything at all. You know, we like to think, we're indestructible or invincible.
Well, certainly rock stars, feel that way well beyond the average human.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's, you know, you get thrust into a situation where you have no control over anything you do.
Yeah, at this point.
So it makes you realize, you know, how thankful we should be and grateful we should be for whatever we can do. And I think that gratitude and awareness of, like, growing and being thankful helps the process of healing. You know,
well, you probably had a great support group around you, too. I mean, your family
absolutely.
Was there.
Family has always been a big inspiration for me through the Kinks and me and Ray growing up in a big family. So family has always been at the heart of inspiration for me and the Kinks.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to ask you about the film portrait of you, as well as Brother Ray, that Julian Temple made of you guys.
Oh, yeah.
In 2011. Yeah. Yours was called Kingdom Come and Ray's is Imaginary Man. How did that come about?
Well, yeah, I've known Julian, obviously, for many years.
And yeah, yeah. He's a big Kings fan, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we thought we'd get together and make a little documentary about where I lived at the time, my philosophical and spiritual ideas, along with the music. And it was a lot of fun to do. And Julian was very receptive to my thoughts and ideas. And it was a lot of fun to do. It really was.
Yeah, it seems the big takeaway is your spirituality, your enjoyment of isolation, especially living on the moors.
Well, I did at that time. I did, like, during my recovery, I spent a lot of time on my own, really, and in the country. I think there's a lot of power to nature. I think when we can attune ourselves more with nature, mm-hmm. I think we get back a lot from our environment and trees and air, just fresh air, and animals. And
it is where we come from.
Well, yeah. You know, we're earth creatures.
Yeah.
We come from the earth.
Even though we constantly try to separate ourselves from that and have been for the entire age of civilization.
Yeah, we do, don't we? But in the end, that's where we go back to. You know, whatever kind of spiritual ideas people might have, our bodies are ancient, and we grow from the earth.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And it will give you back. You know, when you need energy or to get back into shape or get in some healthier place, we need nature to remind us how to do it.
That's a great philosophy. So, were you always an isolationist, or perhaps loner, or was this just something to help with the healing of your
I think
body
it helped.
Psyche?
Of course, I'm so used to performing in front of people. I mean, I feel the most comfortable when I'm singing and playing guitar and on stage. I think that's really my home. I always feel more at home doing that than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I've always done.
I think that started with the family, right? You guys all
absolutely
the piano, and I think your mom was quite a singer herself. So you are the youngest of the Davies family, right? Eight siblings, including yourself.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Yeah, and again, you grew up in a very musical family.
Yeah, I mean, all of my sisters sang or played the piano. My dad played banjo, and he loved to dance. And it was, you know, it was a very, very nurturing, you know, to be a young musician in a family like that. It's very encouraging,
mm-hmm.
and very nurturing place to be. You know, the support that both Ray and I got as kids growing up in that sort of environment was amazing. I mean, the musical influences, like Hank Williams to Perry Como to Elvis to Chuck Berry, I mean, right across the board, you know, there were amazing influences. It was a really great time to grow up in the 50s.
And yeah, it sounds rather idyllic and just a fun family dynamic.
Because everything was so new and fresh, you know.
Yeah, we were coming out of the war. You were born in 47, so you probably still experienced some of the rationing and the tough times of the British economy.
Yeah, but also you also get it. You get informed by it through your family.
Yeah,
and
well,
stories
yeah.
and your uncles
right.
telling you about this is what happened, where they went, and uncles that were talking about being in the war, actually
yeah.
physically,
mm-hmm.
you know, you get informed by the people around you as well.
Yeah.
So, and the music was also fresh. There was incredible music at that time. And finding that out, the blues and country and western and Oh, the incredible music.
Yeah, and then obviously you and a million other British kids fell in with skiffle.
Yeah, skiffle was big. It was kind of like an easier sort of sing-along version of the country and the blues. Because blues, the early blues music was wonderful because it really helped me as a young player. But skiffle was a way of not popularizing, but an easier way to perform a lot of these songs.
Right.
And I thought skiffle was a really big thing because we had a guy in England, a singer called Lonnie Donegan.
Oh, yes.
Who I don't know if he ever
never made
hit
it over
America.
Here to America.
Yeah.
No.
But he was a big
influential there. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because he introduced...
Was it Rock Island?
Leadbelly.
Yeah.
He introduced...
Rock Island Line.
Yeah, that's right. Rock mm-hmm. Island Line and or various other songs that really... He popularized really chain gang songs, some of them from like old Leadbelly tunes.
Yeah.
So it was really important, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And also, you have to remember, he brought the humor element into the music, because skiffle was kind of funny as well as it was entertaining.
Yeah,
it wasn't
good
dull,
time. Good but, time. Let's have a good time.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But also, obviously, you know, more serious aspects to the music, but it had, and that's why rock and roll really came of age.
On your side of the pond, definitely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because it's about everything. It's about pain.
Yep, the experience,
it's about love,
the local
everything.
Experience. You're on the aisle there, and you are internalizing your experience, but in a similar format to what Americans were doing with blues and country.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mentioned Hank Williams, but in my mind, he was like the first rock and roller, really, because he had that incredible voice that when you hear it makes...
Oh, emotionalism,
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And the humor.
Mm-hmm.
I will never get out of this world alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, it's true, it's funny, it's lots of things.
Yeah, you but, really fell in love with the blues and early American rockers, especially like guitar god Eddie Cochran, right?
Oh, yeah, I loved him. I loved him.
Yeah.
He had something totally unique, you know, and the rhythmic structure of the songs was so inspiring, and his voice was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very different from like Rick Nelson, who I loved, and Elvis. He was a bit grittier, but his guitar playing was really ahead of the game, I think, in those days. And of course, he was a lot bigger in Europe than he was in America.
Yeah.
But he had hits. I mean, Come On Everybody is like probably one of the greatest records of all time. I mean, there's many.
Many
great.
Yeah.
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 There's been so many great performers. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, Ricky Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very inspired by his singing. He had a great voice. And also he used really great guitar players. His rhythm sections or the arrangements players on his records are fantastic.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, the record he had, Hello, Mary Lou, the guitar solo on that is one of the most amazing guitars, rock and roll guitar solos. But it's kind of country.
Was that Chet
like country?
Do you remember?
I think it might have been James Burton, but don't hold me to it. I might be wrong.
We'll go and look, and I'll let you know.
Yeah, let me know.
So you beat Ray to form the first band, right?
Yeah. I mean, Ray was in blues band, but was in a couple of bands at school with Pete Quaife. And Ray really started in blues band. That's where he got you know, learned harmonica. But we're big fans of, you know, people like Sonny Boy Williamson.
Right.
He was a great harp player. And John Lee Hooker was an immense influence on us both.
Oh, yeah.
All these incredible
sonic
beauty. I mean, it's amazing music.
Oh, it really meant a lot to your generation of rock and rollers.
Absolutely, because it gave life to everything we heard.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, it's amazing.
Oh, when we did our story.
And there's so many artists that were influential that I can't really begin to name them all, but there's so many great musicians and singers and country people, blues guys, and of course, I think Chuck Berry was one of the most influential of my generation.
Oh, the father of rock and roll, definitely.
I mean,
he took all the pieces and kind of put it together, and
he made it all work.
Yeah,
and I think above all, he was funny.
Yeah.
You know, he added humor to it all, and it made it work like a clock. You know, everything worked in harmony. Fantastic.
Meanwhile, I was thinking, oh yes,
like everyday life. You know,
yeah.
He had a way of turning the mundane into an exciting time.
Yeah.
So you never had an ordinary day when listening to Chuck Berry.
No, in fact, I think it kept you out of school quite a bit, didn't it?
You know, it kept making you feel alive, and everything happened to you was an exciting event.
Yeah.
You know, I think he was one of the greatest rock and roll lyricists. I think, I know only people talk about Dylan, but it's sort of a different, it's coming from a different place.
Oh, Chuck. Oh, as a lyricist. Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, he told stories that he picked out from country, and that's the basis of country music is telling a three-act play in 2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, he was a genius at creating imagery of ordinary situations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, when you listen to it, it sounds, wow, you think it's easy, but you try and do it.
You got to do it in like 3 minutes or less. That's not easy. If you want to write it out all day long, sure, but this is really
tough, so many
material to make.
So many classical gems in like Too Much Monkey Business.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, it's clever, mm-hmm. and it's uplifting. It's you know, it's amazing influence, Chuck Berry, and guitar players and singers and performers. And it's always cabaret, almost like it's like the complete rock and roll experience, really, Chuck Berry.
Well, you guys brought something new and unique to the art form itself, and that was music hall. That early generation of British rockers, you know, grew up on the music hall, and as we talked about earlier with your family sitting around the piano, I'm sure there was a lot of that going on.
Oh, well, yeah, there was a lot of English folk music mm-hmm. as well, which mm-hmm. played an important part mm-hmm. because really our family get-togethers. I mean, Dad would bring in a crate of ale or beer and with his friends, and then people would sing their own favorite songs of Doris Day or whatever it was. It was all mm-hmm. important. And The Kinks virtually started out like drawing off roots like a lot of folk players did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Folk music people play, you know, in small communities had to, you know, pick up a banjo or even a piece of wood and bang it against
Not too dissimilar from the skiffle world. It's exactly. Whatever you can grab, you know, washboard or...
like joke bands.
Yeah,
where they,
joke band, right.
That
right,
thing
right,
where joke
right,
bands
right,
come from.
Right, right.
It's so wonderful. I mean...
So we mentioned Peter Quay briefly here, and the three of you actually start off as the Kinks. I know Mickey Avery comes in later. And there's Ray on one side, you on the other side, not too dissimilar from what I've read about your early football exploits, and Pete in the middle, right?
Yeah. That's kind of – I think Pete doesn't get a lot of credit, but I think he was very – very totally important because he was like the glue that held me and Ray together.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a really fine musician. And, like right from the days of Duane Eddy, I mean, he was an incredible influence. How he changed the whole tone of the guitar. And I think his influence was amazing. And Pete really held the Kinks together in a lot of emotionally as well. And he had a great sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't overemphasize the need for humor in music.
Oh, yeah.
Because it gives it longevity, it gives it coloring, it gives it an emotional depth. It's, you know...
I think we're missing quite a bit of that in today's music. It's a little too perfected, a little too unemotional, a little too dependent on machinery.
I do agree. I think that's an important aspect of Decade.
Mm-hmm.
My new album, my new old album, whatever. Decade, because we've tried to keep a lot of that organic kind of, almost not throwaway, but things you think might not work sometimes do work.
Yeah.
Those accidents that music needs, those happy accidents, it seems like it's going in the wrong place and then all of a sudden it makes you feel good. You know, it's these intangible feelings of music. You can't punch them into a computer.
No.
Deliver it out the other end, being, you know, it's like humanness is important.
Well, it's the natural world that we were talking about earlier, and what
absolutely
what rock and roll did from a musical standpoint is it was all in emotionally. That was the point of it. We had gone from classical and even jazz starts, bringing in a bit of that, and of course the folk and country, the lower classes of musical tradition, if you will. But then rock and roll just comes in and just takes the world by storm.
Yeah, it's phenomenal how it happened. I remember it sitting around the front room with my brothers and sisters. And my sister Dolly would play a Fats Domino record.
Mm-hmm.
And it transported me. I thought, what the hell is that? And I didn't know how to do anything but dance. It's like incredible. His voice and the sound of the band. Incredible.
Yeah. Oh, all those guys. Little Richard.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Oh, Little Richard. His voice.
Yeah.
You know, he really inspired Paul McCartney and the way he helped, the way that he sang. We all tried to copy all those incredible notes he used to reach, and they all informed our own style of performing.
Yeah, yeah.
Richard, oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all those guys, along with the blues, influenced you guys, and then you guys brought something completely new to it, which we over here call the British Invasion.
That's a funny term, but I know what you mean.
I know, but still. So in 1964, you guys signed with Pye Records with the help of Shel Tomey, but I think drummer Mickey Willits leaves and is eventually replaced by Mick Avery, and we have the classic Kinks lineup. You changed the name from the Ravens to the Kinks, and the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah.
And then the third single is You Really Got Me, and you guys become overnight legends. And if you just had that one, as if that was just a one-hit wonder, I think you all would still be remembered. Most of our listeners know, while the song's a standout in and of itself, it's this new quote-unquote sound that pours out of those old tinny little speakers. And we know that can be attributed to yourself and a crafty razor blade.
Yeah.
So you took a razor blade, you cut the back of the speaker cone, and created this new small change. And it seems like a simple trick, but like a lot of things in history, sometimes the smallest change makes the biggest impact.
That's very true. That, and also, I didn't know what I was doing. It could have just all sounded like I don't know, like nothing.
Yeah.
Or I didn't even imagine for a minute that it would actually work or what it would do. So I was the most surprised person in the world when I actually came out with that rasping tone, and I thought, oh wow.
Yeah, I think it wasn't until you heard it on the radio that you went, oh,
that's right.
I think you got something here.
That's true. That when it came out, and I heard it on the radio deal for the first time, I thought, wow. Yeah, but we recorded it and spent a lot of time on it. And
yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, amazing time.
I want to add another thought here. You know, everyone knows the Beatles, the Stones, and the Who are the big triad of what we call the British invasion. But looking back 50 years, and everyone can take the time to barely scratch the surface, and all of a sudden you guys should be counted right there with the other three.
Well, thank you. I agree with it.
but in some ways, you know, it's funny. In some ways, long term, it might serve you better, you know, at least to American audiences. You know, you're this huge well of mystery that with just one look will cause someone interested to get a full story of the band and an immense sense of pleasure and satisfaction as song after song, album after album, you know, reveals itself as a towering achievement.
Oh, thank you. I don't say so. But, I mean, looking back over the Kinks' career, we've covered so many topics and albums like Muswell Hillbillies and Arthur. I mean, it's just scratches the surface of the music we did together. It's an immense journey.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to the 1965 American Federation of Music ban that is the only reason why you're not there, you know, in the first thought, you know. But, hey, you made it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on your first year of eligibility. That shows just how important you guys are. You're the godfathers of 90s Britpop. I don't think there's anybody who would disagree with that. You know, and it's just, you're just as towering of figures as any of those guys. So you've had seven solo titles, along with a few live albums, and now two albums of unearthed artifacts. Are there more unreleased Dave Davies tracks hidden under the bed?
Or? There might be a few, but I think we're kind of on Decade. I think we've kind of pulled, you know, most of the good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, most people don't know that your first solo album isn't until 1980, AFL 1-3603.
So Decade kind of starts, really, the writing process just before the album, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's even a track I recorded for the AFL album on Decade I didn't use.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
So they kind of, it goes right up to the album, really. A lot of recordings off of Decade.
Well, can't wait to hear that. So, of course, I have to ask, because I'm no special than any other interviewer, and let's face it, everyone is hoping. So earlier this year, Ray said you guys are headed to the studio along with Mick. How's that going?
Well, I get back to UK. I've been over here for a few months, and I'm going back to London for a bit, and me and Ro get together and just see where we go next. And we have for this screen a new
Preservation
edition,
coming out,
coming out in October as well. So it's going to be an interesting time. So
yeah, October is big for you guys. You know, you've got your son's album, you said, is coming out. You've got Decades coming out, and Village Green Preservation Society. So it sounds like a sunny afternoon for Kinks fans this October. So you're 71 years young, still out living the rock and roll life, a Hall of Famer, a living legend. Dave Davies, it's a supreme pleasure having you on Deeper Digs in Rock with us today.
Oh, it's been great. I really feel you're doing a fine job there, Christian.
Thanks, Dave. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon. Hopefully we'll see you out on the West Coast on a tour soon.
That'd be great. Yeah. You take care, my friend.
That clip is called Cradle to the Grave from the new album Decade by Dave Davies, out October 12th, 2018. Such an honor to talk with him. He was such a big part of big moments in rock history. Of course, Sir Ray Davies gets all the usual accolades as the primary songwriter, and he certainly deserves that, I suppose. But I know a bit about band dynamics and how hard it is to find anything that finds magic. And the Kinks are all magicians. Ray is very much indebted to Dave and to Mick, and of course the dearly departed Peter Quaife, who was a monk playing peacemaker as best he could between the warring parties when he was alive. Well, let's hope the spirit of Pete is with the three and will keep them well-respected men in the studio. I would love to see a Kinks reunion for one more go out on the road and give the people what they want. Okay, that's it for this edition, and I hope you stop back again for more Deeper Digs in Rock. I'm Christian Sway, the rock and roll archaeologist, and as always, keep up the rockin'. Hey diggers, Christian Swain here with a short pause for a great cause. We believe music education for young people is an investment in a better future for all of us. If you listen to our podcasts, chances are you agree. Little Kids Rock has transformed the lives of more than 650,000 public school students by bringing music education into their schools. Little Kids Rock trains teachers in underfunded schools to teach kids the music they love. From the Beatles to Bruno Mars, Led Zeppelin to Lady Gaga, Chuck Berry to Chance the Rapper. Little Kids Rock has become a national movement to restore, expand, and innovate music education in public schools across America. Visit littlekidsrock.org and learn more about how you can help put music where it belongs, in our schools. Thank you, and let's keep up the rockin' right into the next generation.
Deeper Digs in Rock produced and hosted by Christian Swain. All sound design and incidental music by Busy Signal Studios. All quotes performed by actors unless noted. Playlists can be found at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Please purchase these great and important tracks. All songs, clips, and references can be found on our show notes. Please visit rnrap.com for more information.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.